Well, we're in our second week of a series that we have called Wonder Women. And if you missed last week, hey, okay, sure. I agree. If you missed last week, you can check it out online at www.ngate.ca. We post all of our sermons online. You can check it out. But we talked about a girl named Tamar last week. And Tamar, the long and short of it, is that she married into a family. Two of her husbands died. She was supposed to marry the third boy of that family. Didn't work out. Her father-in-law decided to make her into a mourning widow and go live back with her dad. So she posed as a prostitute to get revenge on her father-in-law. Crazy story. So if you want to know more about it, you can check it out online. It's pretty amazing how it all wraps up. But we're in this series because we're talking about these women that Matthew is the first book of the New Testament, and the book of Matthew is written by a guy named Matthew. He's a disciple of Jesus, and he wrote this book about Jesus. So he starts it with the genealogy of Jesus, and in that genealogy, in that time, it would have been perfectly normal to have a genealogy without women in it at all. And so it would have been just men, and this is how they came about. So this guy, and then this person, and they had this son, and they had this son, and they had this son. That was normal. Well, Matthew puts in four women. There's four women that land in his genealogy, the genealogy where Jesus lands in. And the women are Tamar, the one I just told you about who poses as a prostitute, Rahab, the one I'll be talking about today who is a prostitute, then Ruth, who's this foreigner who's a mourning widow as well who has to move out of her land, and then next week we're going to be talking about Bathsheba, who has an affair with a king, and out of that affair, an entire kingdom crumbles. What an exciting bunch of women, hey? Like, what are you thinking? Well, actually, the title of the series didn't come from Wonder Women, like, da-da-da, these are the best women, we should all look to them. It came from, I wonder why you put these in there, Matthew. I wonder why these women are there at all. Why did you make these part of the story? And the reason he did that is the same reason that Jesus continues to make himself part of that type of stories. Jesus doesn't think anyone's too far gone. Jesus doesn't think anyone's too messed up, or their history or their life or their background or wherever they're at is just too messed up to reach. In fact, he says, a pretend prostitute, a prostitute, a foreigner who's a mourning widow, and a woman who has an affair and destroys a kingdom. Looks good. I'm going to go in that story. Because he comes into messed up stories. That's who Jesus is. And that's why we would celebrate this, why we talk about it at all, why we want to mention these four women, and why Matthew wanted to mention these four women, because God could have put Jesus, he could have landed God in flesh, Jesus Christ, into any genealogy he wants, but this was the one he chose. It wasn't just the one he landed in and said, hey, you know what, I'll have to figure out how to get over my past. And my great-great-great-grandma was a pretend prostitute, and then the next one was a real prostitute, and then the next one was... he's like, where should we go with this one? It's messed up. It's confused and it's broken. Let's redeem these stories. That's what Jesus is all about. And that's why we love celebrating Jesus and being a part of a church that does that. Hey, next week we're going to have Pastor Allen preach to you. Woo-woo! I'm going to be away actually in Edmonton doing a little youth conference, and I'm speaking at a church called West Edmonton Christian Assembly. And so I'm heading out on Friday, and Pastor Allen is going to preach about Bathsheba. So it's going to be awesome. You better come on out and hear some of that. It's going to be really, really good time. I'm excited about what he's sharing on. But the story of Rahab, this prostitute who lived in a city named Jericho, it comes to us in the book of Joshua. And Rahab's an interesting story because I really believe, as I've spent time with it, that Rahab may have been one of these heroes that you don't really identify as a hero until you look into the story a bit more. But Rahab was one of these heroes that actually launched Israel into defeating Jericho. It's her testimony and her life and her story that actually launched Israel God's people into the impossible, and she made it possible in lots of ways because of how she saw God. I'm excited to share about that. I love when impossible things become possible, don't you? I love when we can actually look to God and say, impossibilities become possible. I had a situation this week of actually just yesterday, of the impossible becoming possible with my son. Saturdays, I like to try to find something to do with my kids, yesterday I was coming home, and I went to a consignment toy store, and I found a puzzle. I love puzzles, and it was a used puzzle, and it still had all the pieces. Isn't that awesome? That's a miracle. That's part of my praise report for today. But anyways, I brought the puzzle home, and it was a Barbie puzzle. It's the only one I could find for a dollar, so it's just the one we're going to go with. So I come home, I got a Barbie puzzle. I'm like, Hardy, you're going to love this, right? Come on, buddy, do you love it? Okay, whatever. So anyways, we sit down, Hardy, Izzy, Barbie puzzle, and it's going to be awesome, 100 pieces. And we start going, and Izzy, both of them are kind of a little bit discouraged when you dump all the pieces out, right? You dump all the pieces out, it's like, maybe we shouldn't do this, actually. It's just a big mess, right? And I said, no, let's organize it. Start flipping them over, put these ones over here. So Izzy starts getting into it. She's our five-year-old, and she starts putting things in the right spot. She goes, look at this, Dad, and she's got two together right away. I'm like, awesome. And so we start going, and I say, Hardy, you work on these ones, and Izzy, you work on these ones. And Hardy looks at it right away and goes, Dad, help! I'm like, son, you haven't even tried. You haven't even looked at it. Here, try putting those two together. We'll work on it for a while. I say, Hardy, we're building all the outside edge to start. So do you know what an outside edge looks like? Yeah. Like the straight line. You see the straight line? Yeah. Like, okay, so which one of these has an outside edge? He's like, and one's like literally, zoo, 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 zoo. He goes, that one? Wrong one. Son, I'm the straight line. Look for the straight line. Okay, anyways, just start building the puzzle already. I'm going to make some lunch. And so he starts every single time. He'll get one. I'll help him get one. And then he literally puts the thing in, doesn't look around. He just goes, I need help, Dad. This is impossible. I'm like, this is not impossible, son. You got to try. You got to look around, okay? So look around, nothing, okay. And then I'll find the piece. I'll say, okay, this piece fits there. And he'll grab it. There's a straight line all the way along here. And he'll flip it over, and the straight line's up here. He goes, oh, and he'll try to put it in. And he'll say, it doesn't work. I'm like, son, you need to flip that over. And I'm getting really tired of this. So he literally grabs the puzzle piece, and he flips it over so the face is down and the gray part is up. I'm like, are you serious, son? One side has a picture, the other side is gray. I tell you to flip it over. I told you it's possible. He flips it over. He goes, it still doesn't fit. Of course it doesn't fit. What are you doing? Look at the line. Look at the line. The picture goes together. Give me the piece. Go play with the Barbies. I'm just kidding. Leave me alone with this puzzle. Sometimes I think God probably feels that same way with us. Where we're sort of looking at our situation, our life, or what's going on with us, and we can kind of look and say, this is what God asked me to do, but it's impossible. And God's sitting there like, I told you can do it. I told you it's possible. All you got to do is start going, no, help me. Like, this is the straight line. Line up the straight line. And we're flipping it over onto the wrong spot and doing all these things. He said, I just told you to walk for. I feel like God's probably sitting in heaven sometimes thinking, why can't you just walk straight? Told you A to B. And we're sitting there like, oh, no, I can't do it. I feel like God probably sometimes pulling out his hair saying, I still love you. I don't know. He's a lot better of a dad than me, but that's how I'm looking at my son. And Israel has a history of making these kind of decisions with God, where God says, here's where I want you to go, and they're saying, yeah, but it's impossible, so nah. And so they just don't. And they just don't walk where he's telling them to walk. He says, all things are possible with me. Why are you skirting around the issue and avoiding the thing that I'm just telling you to walk into? Israel has this history. They're known as God's people in the Bible. And Israel, led through a journey, ended up in Egypt for 400 years, enslaved to the Egyptians. Eventually, this guy named Moses comes along, and there's this promise all through Israel's history of this promised land that God was going to establish them in, this promised land that flows with milk and honey. And so Moses eventually is called by God to lead the people out of slavery, out of Egypt, into this brief stint in the wilderness and into the promised land. So this is the role of Moses. Well, they cross the Red Sea. They get into the wilderness. They do a bunch of things with the law and all this stuff that God, these miracles that God gives them. And then he says, okay, now it's time to go to the promised land. Send 12 spies. So they send 12 spies into the promised land, and they go and check out the land. And that's what I just want to give you, that bit of backstory about Rahab. Here's what the report they come back with. Numbers 13, 26 to 33. They came back to Moses and Aaron, the whole Israelite community at Kadesh in the desert of Paran. There they reported to them and the whole assembly and showed them the fruit of the land. They gave Moses this account. We went to the land to which you sent us, and it does flow with milk and honey, which means it's awesome. Here is its fruit. But the people who live there are powerful, and the cities are fortified and very large. We even saw descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites live in the Negev. The Hittites, Jebusites, and Amorites live in the hill country. And the Canaanites live near the sea along the Jordan. So they're like, yes, it's amazing. All of these fruit and the milk and the honey and oh, it's so great. But there's really big people and some powerful cities. So yeah, well, why don't we just live in this really junk hole wilderness instead of going into the promised land? Then Caleb silenced the people before Moses and said, we should go up and take possession of the land, for we can certainly do it. But the men who had gone up with him said, we can't attack those people. They are stronger than we are. And they spread among the Israelites a bad report about the land they had explored. They said, the land we explored devours those living in it. All the people we saw there are of great size. We saw the Nephilim there. The descendants of Anak came from the Nephilim. We seemed like grasshoppers in our own eyes, and we looked the same to them. By the way, they never asked anyone how they looked to them. But they just go in, and they see, yes, the promised land. They see, yes, this puzzle piece fits here. The line lines up. I know how to put it in, but instead they're trying to do it a different way. Maybe we can get in there some other way. Maybe God can wipe them out ahead of time. Maybe we can just wait a little while in the wilderness, and an earthquake will swallow them all up, and we can just walk in nicely. But God said, go take it now. God said, go walk in. So 10 of these spies say, we're not going. It's scary. Doesn't matter if it's God's promise. It's scary. We're not going. 2 of the spies, Caleb and Joshua, come back and say, let's go. Who cares if it's scary? God said, this is the line. God says, we're the puzzle piece. God says, take the step and walk in. We've seen him do miraculous things. Let's go for it. But they decide not to go. So God says, okay, an entire generation is going to die off here in the wilderness except for Joshua and Caleb. So somewhere around 40 years later, Joshua is now the leader of this same Israelite group of people, though a whole generation is gone, and now there's all these new people who are ready to take the promise of God. And Joshua decides, God says, send 2 spies in. So he sends 2 spies in. They go to Jericho. They go check out the area. Very similar situation where they're going to look. And you can imagine the thought, like, are they going to come back and say the same? Great land, big people, let's not go. Great land, fortified cities, let's not go. But they come back in Joshua 2, 24, and they said to Joshua, the Lord has surely given the whole land into our hands. All the people are melting in fear because of us. Sort of wonder, how did they know that? First spies went and saw a lot of big people, a lot of big walls, and said, we look like grasshoppers to them. We better not do this. The second spies go in and they say, hey, they're melting in fear because of us. Do you know who told them that? Rahab. Rahab was the only person that told them that. A prostitute in Jericho was the one who said, these people all melt in fear. She used those exact words, the very words that they come back to compel Israel to go and take Jericho, the very words that they come back to Joshua with, the very words that encourage the people and push them forward, comes from a prostitute in a pagan city that worships all sorts of idols, that does child sacrificing, does all of this crazy stuff. The lowest of the low in that city comes out to them and says, hey, we melt in fear because of you. And that's enough. Isn't that amazing? Rahab becomes this hero of Israel. She ends up living with them after, marries a guy named Salmon. Who wouldn't with that name? She tells them this story about who God is. So what happened is the two Israelites went in undercover, because now Jericho is this big walled city, but they've got 2 million people sitting out in a wilderness just across a river from them. They're thinking, I don't know what these guys are all about, but let's not let the Israelites in, you know? And so these two spies end up getting in, and they're probably around the city trying to get a feel, what's going on, where are people at, what's happening. And all of a sudden, this woman comes up to them. This woman who's probably not looking like she's got everything all together, right? This prostitute in the land. She shows up to them and says, Are you the Israelites? Is that who you are? You're the Israelites that I heard about? You're the Israelites that have been waiting out? And the spies are probably, why do you ask? And they say, Rahab says, I have questions for you. I've heard about you. Can I have you over? Can we go and talk? Can we go to my house and share? And you can imagine the feeling that the Israelites would have in this moment. We're in Jericho. Walking through these streets is not like sometimes when we picture Jericho, this walled city, it's beautiful and ornate and amazing. They literally would have sacrificed their own children to pagan gods. These guys don't fit. Israel is walking in and sort of like, hey, here we are, and our God is the greatest, and what are we supposed to do here? What should we? And Rahab, the prostitute, that even in Jericho, probably no one pays attention to this woman. Even in that culture, she's the low of the low. She walks up. Imagine the thought in their head, like, would God send us this person? Is this really who we're supposed to talk to? Is this really who we're supposed to learn from? Is that really the story that we're supposed to tell? Hey, Joshua, we chatted with a prostitute and it's all good. Let's go. Is that the story we're going to tell? Like, how is that supposed to work? But early on in the Bible, we recognize that God is not trying to figure out the greatest powerful person and get and influence them. God always works through the broken. God always works through the marginalized. God always works through the poor and the people who are pushed to the edge of society. God always moves in them. And so here's Rahab. Can you guys come to my house? It says, actually, she actually has her name in the heroic Hebrews 11 book, the chapter of people of faith. It says, by faith the prostitute Rahab, because she welcomed the spies, was not killed with those who were disobedient. So she brings them into her house, and they're all hanging out, chatting. I don't know what they've chatted about so far, and all of a sudden there's a bang on the door, and the people of Jericho are there saying, Rahab, send out the Israelites. It's time for us to kill them. They can't be here. And she hides them, goes down to these people and says, yeah, they were here, but they ran out the back door and down that way and around there. And like, got you guys. And they take off after them. And she goes up to the Israelites at that point and has this conversation, Joshua 2, 9 to 11. I know that the Lord has given you this land. I wonder if in that moment Rahab knew that more than the Israelites knew that. I wonder if she was more confident of that truth than the Israelites were. If they're anything like the spies of old, Rahab believes that more than the Israelites believe that at that point. She says, I know that the Lord has given you this land, Jericho. the place I'm standing, the place where people worship all sorts of other gods, this is the place, it will be yours. Has given you this land, and that a great fear of you has fallen on us, so that all who live in the country are melting in fear because of you. You remember the report to Joshua? They all melt in fear because of us. Rahab's words repeated directly back to Joshua. We have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to Sihon and Og, the two kings of the Amorites east of the Jordan, whom you completely destroyed. When we heard of it, our hearts melted in fear, and everyone's courage failed because of you. For the Lord your God is God in heaven above and on earth below. You need to capture what a moment this is. Two Israelites sitting there. Usually when we think we're connected with God, that if we're going to go and have a conversation with someone who's not necessarily connected to our God and is connected to a bunch of different gods in a really rough city, that we're probably going to have to describe our God and tell her all about him. And the Israelites are sitting there probably being blown away by what she's saying. Because these Israelites didn't walk through the Red Sea. It was their parents. Imagine Rahab. You guys, what? The Israelites are in my house? Like, do you even know what God did? He opened the Red Sea for you guys. Everyone heard about that. We all talked about you guys are that. And they probably sitting there like, oh, yeah, that was us. I do remember my dad talking about that and how amazing. Yeah, you're right. We have had some cool. Or that battle where you wiped out the Amorites and Sihon and Og. We all heard about that. That's incredible. How was this group of people wandering around in the desert winning battles? Your God must be God. She testifies to them that she now believes in their God. That I sometimes wonder if they believed that God was their God yet. Sometimes it takes that outside person, doesn't it? Sometimes it takes that person who's outside of your circle, that person who's unreachable, when they get reached by God, all of a sudden everyone looks and says, are we serious? God can actually change that life? God can actually do that thing? I've had a number of stories like that in our church this year of people who came miraculously to the foot of Jesus and gave their life over to him and recognized him as the Lord. I've seen people come out of addiction this year, people whose terminal illness brought them to Jesus. And all of a sudden they're finding out about who Jesus is. In this church, I've seen that. There's something that happens in my faith and our faith when someone who we couldn't have fathomed coming to know Jesus all of a sudden does. What happens to these Israelites at this point, right? What are you talking about, Rahab? I thought you're part of Jericho. I thought you're in this city. I thought you would worship these other gods. I did. I was that way, and I lived this life, and I'm not proud of it, and it's not great, but I want to know, would your God save me too? She asks them, could I be saved with you guys? She's so confident that God is going to destroy Jericho that she wants to know if she can get saved as well. Imagine that kind of faith. Usually we think that's only in pastors, people who have been part of the church for years and years and years. Reality, sometimes that faith has gotten pretty stagnant after years and years and years. And we need the Rahabs of the world who are going to come along and say, I see something that you've forgotten. I see something that you've lost over time. I see something that is bigger than you've known. I see the Red Sea. I saw the stories. I've heard about it all. You have no idea how powerful your God is and what incredible things he's done. You have no idea what that's all about. Can he save me too? She says. And they're like, I just love what they probably felt in that moment. Like, what is going on? And they said, yeah, he can. You bring your family into this room. You don't tell anyone about this conversation, and you hang a scarlet cord outside of your window. And when you do, when this place is destroyed, which it will be, you will be saved. And then they leave. That's it. She lowers them down out a window, and away they go. They go and report back to Joshua. After that, Joshua hears from the commander of the Lord's army how to go and take out Jericho. And they start walking around Jericho. They start the battle cry. If you know the story, they walk around Jericho once per day for 6 days, and then seven times on the seventh day. 13 times they walk around Jericho. And every time, I've read this story a million times and missed this in some ways. Every single time they would have walked around that wall, they would have seen the scarlet cord that Rahab was hanging out the window. Every time they walked around, they would have said, "There it is. Remember, guys. Remember, a prostitute inside of Jericho has decided that our God is God, and she has said that our God will give us this land. That scarlet cord says so. Let's remember her. Let's remember her faith. Even though the walls are not crumbling, we're not seeing a lot of movement, even though they're mocking us inside the building, inside the city, they're yelling at us from the walls, and we're not seeing God deliver us yet, that scarlet cord reminds us that someone recognized God." How inspiring was it? We need Rahabs in our life. We need people who are turning their life over to God, finding Jesus, experiencing the fullness of life over and over, because reality is, if we don't see that, we just read the Bible and we spend time doing that, it eventually sometimes dries up. But if we, there's something so life-giving when someone around you says, "You know, I didn't ever expect this to happen, but I think I'm seeing things the way you're seeing them. I'm seeing God. I'm recognizing Jesus. I'm recognizing the life he gives. And I want it. I want that." There's something so incredible about that. There's two things that these spies did to make that happen. Sometimes when we think about how are we going to get someone to all of a sudden find out about Jesus, and we think that we better go out and we better say all the right words, we better convince people, we better make a compelling argument, we better do all these things. Sometimes that might be part of it. But I don't think those are the things that the spies did. The spies were dumbfounded this whole time. It's a really amazing model for missions. You're telling us about our God. Crazy. But here's what they did. Two things. One, they went into an ugly city that didn't represent them at all, and they saw this person who was lower than most people in the city, was thought of as basically nothing, and they saw some good. I think as Christians, we got to get better at seeing good. We got to be able to recognize when good things are happening, even in bad people. Even in bad circumstances, even in bad situations, it seems like Christians have become really good at telling everyone about how bad things are. That's bizarre to me. Why are we the ones telling everyone how bad things are when we're the only ones with the hope for eternity? We're the only ones that know Jesus. If you're not a Christian, you don't know Jesus. If you are a Christian, you do know Jesus. If we know Jesus, we believe in the hope that he's given us, and that he's given us life, and that he can redeem all things, that he can set up a new life for people, that he can pull prostitutes and people who are addicted and people who have been abusive and people who have been abused, and he can raise them up and say, "I've got life for you, I've got hope for you, I've got joy for you, I've got something incredible for you, I still have a life and a hope for you." Meanwhile, all of that is still there, and we're going around and saying, "I can't believe this politician is leading, or this one is, or this thing's going on, and I can't believe how dark the world is getting." Well, let's spread some light. Amen. If the world is dark, let's spread some light. This is crazy that we think that way. And so they go in, and they're like, "Well, this is a prostitute. She's not looking too good. But she's offered us hospitality. Okay, we'll see the good in that." And they carry on and they go to her house. What would it look like? What kind of bridges are built when we just decide to see the good in someone? Yeah, your life is looking pretty mixed up. But hey, did you know that you're really good at this? You know that you're hospitable? Did you know that you're caring? Have you realized that you're actually really loving? Did you notice that you're a leader? I used to do that to youth all the time. They'd be like leading in a completely terrible way. People are following them to all sorts of bad situations and all sorts of bad stuff. I said, "Did you know that you're a leader? Like, what? I'm not a leader. I'm doing lots of bad things. I know, and look how many other people are doing bad things because of you. You're a leader. Like, that's incredible. By the way, did you know God gave you that gift and you could use it for good as well? Starts to wreck them a bit. Wait, you're right. I am a leader. Rahab, do you know you're a great host? This is delicious tea, you know? I don't know what it is. I can't even believe it. Is this a French press, or what did you do? This is, the coffee's delicious. Thank you for having us over. You know, I don't know what the conversation was, but they just allowed her to be good to them. They allowed her to be kind to them. Even though she wasn't a good person, even though she wasn't one of their type of people, they allowed for that goodness to happen, and they were pleasant to each other. The bridge was built. The conversation could start that could open up to the next piece of it. So first, we need to see the good in people, and second, they need to see the God in us. That's a challenging one, too. Yeah, we got to see some good in people. But once we built that bridge, are there stories of what God is doing in our life? Are we living any different than anyone else? Are we living the same as everyone else? Would they look at your marriage, say, oh, how do you do it? I can't believe that your marriage is so incredible. Even though she treats you this way, you continue to act. Even though he treats you that way, you're still in that? What are you doing in that marriage? What? You got out to the other side of it, and you're thriving, and you're happy? How is that working in your life? I don't get it. Do people see God in your marriage? Or do you get to them and say, hey, this is all good, no problem, and they don't actually see anything different? See, Rahab starts identifying, oh, Israelites, Red See, do you know what God has done in you, Israelites? You know, what do people say when they see you with your kids? Wow, God is in that person. Look what God's doing. That kid doesn't even know how to put together puzzles. And that dad's still patient. No, he's not. He's not that patient. You know, what are people seeing when they're seeing you raise your kids? What about your generosity or greed? Wow, look at how generous you are. You've actually given too much. You can't even get a tax write-off for that anymore. You're not even benefiting yourself. Why are you giving so much? God. What about purity? Some of us are in high school, college here. I know that's a journey and a half when you're there. What does it look like to live a different kind of life that you don't follow the same trends of sleeping around? And just carrying on and whatever, this doesn't matter, it's just my body, and it's all good, it doesn't matter at all. What would it look like for you to say, man, my life is actually going to change because I'm not going to do that? And people are actually going to take note and say, well, what in the world is wrong with you? And you got to smile. Actually, it's right with me. It's not what's wrong with me. It's what's right with me. I feel great. I don't actually need that. I'm feeling okay. I look forward to it in marriage, but I don't need that sort of life that everyone else really needs. I'm doing great. Why? Jesus. Do they see God in you? Because you're going around seeing good in people and maybe starting relationship, but if they're not seeing God, then they can't identify the God that is your God. Rahab says, I want the God of who? You guys, because you walked through the Red Sea and then you defeated Sihon and Og and the Amorites. I want that God because of what he's done in you. What's God doing in you? What are people seeing in you? What would your coworkers say about your God based on how you treat them? What would your family say about your God based on how you spend time with them? What would your teammates say about your God based on the way that you act with them? What would the random homeless person down the road say about your God based on how you treated them? What do they say? We got to see good in people. They got to see God in us. And when they do, we get some Rahabs. We get some stories. We get people coming to know the God that we know and reminding us that he's as powerful as we originally thought, even though we've sort of forgotten that along the way. And he can do what he promised to do. Worship team, you can come on up. I When I thought about this scarlet cord, by the way, on my notes this week, the title was "The Harlot's Scarlet." I thought that was pretty good, but she hung that scarlet cord. And when I was reading it and thinking about that this week, I thought this was the reminder. This was the reminder that, no, we're not the only ones who believe this. We're not the only ones that great things can happen through. In fact, when they happen to someone like that, it all of a sudden boosts all of our faith. It boosts all of us to life. We all start to expect something incredible. Let's celebrate the Rahabs in this world. And so as I thought about that, I figured we all should have a Rahab. We all should have someone that is going to boost our faith. We all should have someone that is not maybe believing the same things as you right now, but that you, if they would, your faith would just fly through the air. That if they would, all of a sudden you would believe something that you've maybe even never believed before. If they could turn, wow. If they could believe that Jesus is their Lord, wow, what would happen in my heart and my life? What would I start to believe? I know it's often the case that when someone gives their life to Jesus, me as a pastor, I'll be like, yes, God still works. Jesus still makes a difference. It still happens. And if we don't see that, sometimes we forget it. So who's your Rahab? You're praying for that, you're believing God can actually change their life. Reality is someone else may have prayed for Rahab. I don't know. It wasn't these two guys necessarily. They didn't do much in this encounter, it seems to me. You may not be the one who actually gets to see it all, but it's going to liven your faith when it happens. This morning I was chatting with my friend. We were praying before church, and his wife has been praying for her sister for years and years. Very against faith, very against Jesus, very against Christianity for years and years. They mocked her for years. Well, just this last week, she all of a sudden had this conversation with no one necessarily super close with her, 4-hour conversation, and decided, I need to follow Jesus with my life. This has happened. Now, my friends who are here are across the country from her, but it just ignites something in them. There's something that starts to happen when you hear about people coming to know Jesus, because sometimes you're in it long enough and you hear the media and you hear how people think about Christianity, and you hear how your classmates think about Christianity and how your teammates think about Christianity. You hear all of these negative things and you start to think, well, I'm going to be a Christian and I'm going to stay strong to this, but no one else is going to be changed. If no one else was going to be changed, let's all go to heaven right now. But since there are going to be some lives that are going to be changed, we're the ones who are going to see them change. So who's your Rahab? And then ask two questions about that Rahab. How are you seeing the good in them? And how are they seeing the God in you? Who's your Rahab? Who are you praying for? Who are you believing for? Who are you asking God for? Whoever it is, start to build that bridge more and more and more. Identify the good. Call it out. Recognize who they are. Don't just throw judgment and tell them all the things that they're doing wrong and all that. It doesn't work. Go ahead and tell them, what is the good in you? I see it. Do you know God did that in you? Do you know He created you to be that way? Do you know He actually still loves you? Like, it's incredible to see the great gifts you have. Some of those gifts I wish I had, but you've got them. I'm so glad you do. Even that alone, all of a sudden they may look at you and say, I see a little God in you. But how are you showing God to them? How do you see good in them? How do they see God in you? So we have 4 tables on the sides of the room, the balcony, and everyone here can just make their way to those. I'm going to pray quick, and then we've got some pens there. The house lights will come up just a bit. We've got some pens and scarlet cords. Actually red paper, but you can write with a felt on there. Who's your Rahab? Maybe you have one, maybe you have 10. Maybe it's you. Say, you know what, I'm not sure I believe in all this. Oh, what would it look like to write your name on there? Say, God, I want to see you. I want to know you. I want to recognize you. I want to see God in someone. Or write down, if you have 10 or 20 Rahabs, you can do that. But I want you to write that down, and then I want you to hang that scarlet cord somewhere. Maybe it's in a book you read a lot, like the Bible. Maybe it's a different book. Put it on your mirror. Put it somewhere. Don't put it somewhere where they're going to walk into your house and see it and say, oh, there, I'm Rahab, great. But put it somewhere where you're going to see it. And then I want you to start asking yourself every day, am I seeing the good in them? Are they seeing the God in me? Because two spies saw a prostitute in a pagan, nasty city decide that their God was the God and gave their life over to him. And she was saved because of that. Who still needs to get saved? Who still needs to see that in your life? Who still needs to come to that revelation in your life? See the good in them. Let them see the God in you. And let's believe for lives to be changed by this Jesus, who we believe still changes lives and still impacts people. So Lord, thank you that you have given each of us a Rahab. If we haven't had one, I pray that we'd find them. God, I pray that you'd start to ignite our faith, not because of just how hard we work at it, but because you start showing us how people are finding you all around us. Start showing us, Lord, that the gospel still works, that you still impact lives, that there are still people that need to find you and to be encountered, to encounter you and to experience the new hope and the new life that they haven't known before. God, thank you for this story. I pray that we'd write 100 more, 1,000 more in this next year. In your name we pray. Amen. Amen. Well, go ahead. You can all, let's all stand up, and then you can make your way to the side and write a few names down on a scarlet cord. Hang it where you're going to remember it so that you're going to see it every time you walk around Jericho. Go ahead, make your way over there, and we'll see you next week where Pastor Allen will be preaching, and we'd love for you to come. Bring a friend out. It's